Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Dogs, fallen persons, and untouchables, including chandalas, dog-eaters, should all be maintained with their proper necessities, which should be contributed by the householders. Even one's wife at home, with whom one is most intimately attached, should be offered for the reception of guests and people in general. Purport. Although in modern society, the dog is accepted as part of one's household paraphernalia, in the Vedic system of household life, the dog is untouchable. As mentioned here, a dog may be maintained with proper food, but it cannot be allowed to enter one's house, what to speak of the bedroom. Many years ago, I used to write a column for Back to Godhead on education, and I one time wrote a column on being detached from your children. No responses. A little while later, I wrote a column on being detached from pets. We got the most letters of any article ever published in Back to Godhead. And the vast majority of them were negative. And I've reread the article several times, and I can't quite get what they were reacting to. And I talked just about this, that, you know, you can feed the dogs outside, but you don't let them into the house. So, I mean, it got so bad, I got this reputation for being like anti-animal. And then the worst was, I was going to Alachua, you know, the householder capital of the world. And I was going to speak only one morning there. And I looked at the verse that was scheduled from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it was another purport like this. You know, don't let dogs into your house. And I'm like, please, Krishna, no, you know. Fortunately, Jai Pitakumar spoke on two verses the day before me. So he took that one, and I didn't have to get eternally branded as a dog hater. But here Prabhupada's very clear that although you can feed the dogs and you can have affection for the dogs, you don't let them into your house. They're untouchable. He says, what to speak of the bedroom. You know, we see sometimes even devotees, the dogs and cats are in the kitchen. So, you know, they have their Shalagram Shilas on the altar, they have their Radha Krishna on the altar, and while they're cooking, the cats and dogs are watching the cooking. Actually, that's an offense in deity worship, to have food seen by lower animals. And what to speak of, their hairs get all over, and so forth and so on. So this is very unpalatable, because people really love their dogs in modern society. And now even in India, you'll see in some places people having pedigree dogs and walking them. Of course, it doesn't mean we should be cruel to the dogs, but not to keep them, not to make them our lovable objects, not to make them our shelter. My dog loves me unconditionally. You know, at least my dog loves me. Right? Nobody else may love me, but my dog. Actually, your dog doesn't really love you unconditionally. It's just happy that you're feeding it. And we know of two devotees who were bitten by dogs. Two little girls, actually, where the dog, like, ripped their cheek. And one of them had to have extensive surgery, you know, and the kids weren't doing anything. The dog just came up and attacked them. After all, they're dogs. So I'll read that again. Although in modern society, the dog is accepted as part of one's household paraphernalia, in the Vedic system of household life, the dog is untouchable. As mentioned here, a dog may be maintained with proper food, but it cannot be allowed to enter one's house. What do speak of the bedroom? Outcasts or untouchable chandalas should also be provided with the necessity of life. So there are also people who are untouchable. If you touch them, you become contaminated. But that doesn't mean you don't take care of them. The word used in this connection is yata, which means, quote, as much as deserved, unquote. The outcast should not be given money with which to indulge in more than they need, for otherwise they will misuse it. At the present moment, for example, low-class men are generally paid quite amply, but instead of using their money to cultivate knowledge and advance in life, such low-class men use their extra money for wine drinking and similar sinful activities. So, of course, we see this all the time. I remember, you know, we used to do books at O'Hare Airport, and if you got the soldiers, because a lot of soldiers came through Chicago Airport, if you got the soldiers on a Friday, you know, they had $500 or $1,000 in their pocket, and on Monday they had nothing. And what did they spend it all on the weekend? Simply sinful activities. As mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Chaturvanyam mayashrisam guna karma bibhagashaha, there must be four divisions of human society according to the work and qualities of men. Men with the lowest qualities cannot do any work that requires higher intelligence. However, although such a division of men must exist according to their quality and work, in other words, there's no way you can make everybody have spiritual intelligence. It's not possible. Prabhupada's saying higher intelligence, he doesn't mean that you have a low IQ. Obviously, there are many people who do what would be termed shudra work, who are highly intelligent from an IQ point of view, or who are highly skilled in their areas of work, like Srila Prabhupada mentions in the previous verse, things like cloth manufacturers, blacksmiths, goldsmiths. So there may be, you know, craftspersons may have a high degree of intelligence, but not the kind of intelligence that Srila Prabhupada's talking about. So men with the lowest qualities cannot do any work that requires higher intelligence. Although such a division of men must exist according to their quality and works, you cannot artificially make everybody materially equal. It is suggested herewith that everyone must have the necessities of life. The communists of the present day are in favor of supplying the necessities of life to everyone, but they consider only the human beings and not the lower animals. The Bhagavatam's principles are so broad, however, that it recommends that the necessities of life be supplied to everyone, man or animal, regardless of good or bad qualities. So even if someone has bad qualities, still they should be taken care of. Not that you only take care of nice people. Take care of everyone. The idea of giving even one's wife to the service of the public is that one's intimate relationship with his wife or one's excessive attachment for his wife, by which one thinks his wife to be his better half or to be identical with himself, must gradually be given up. As formerly suggested, the idea of ownership, even of one's family, must be abandoned. The dream of material life is the cause of bondage in the cycle of birth and death, and therefore one must give up this dream. Consequently, in the human form of life, one's attachment for his wife should be given up as suggested herein. And we'll talk about that tomorrow because tomorrow's verse concentrates particularly on attachment to the wife. So we'll talk about this last paragraph of today's purport along with the verse and purport tomorrow. Ashvaghante vasayibhya kamam samvibhajadyata apyekam atmano dharam nirnam svatva graho yata. Dogs, fallen persons, and untouchables, including chandalas, dog eaters, should all be maintained with their proper necessities, which should be contributed by the householders. Even one's wife at home, with whom one is most intimately attached, should be offered for the reception of guests and people in general. So such a nice philosophy. Just like we have the idea of achintya bheda bheda tattva, that everything is one with Krishna, and yet different from Krishna. So in the same way, all jivas, just like Madhvacharya talked about, that there's five eternal distinctions and one is between one jiva and another. So it's a fact that each jiva is an individual, but it's also a fact that on another platform, we're all one. We're all part of the body of the Lord. Just like our wonderful devotee Ramashakti in Soho, she just banged her foot into the, what do you call it, the door jamb. And she hit the end of her little toe, which dislocated that little teeny tiny bone and broke it. And so she can't get out of bed for a few days, which, if you know Ramashakti, is a great tapasya. But my point is, even if it's just the little bone of your little toe, you have to take care. She was saying, how amazing that such a tiny, tiny little thing, you know, the little bone of your little toe, it's only like this big. But if you damage it, there's so much pain. And you don't say, oh, I don't care about the last bone of my little toe. You don't go to the doctor and say, just cut it off. Who cares about it? I only care about my eyes. No, we care about our eyes and we care about our little toe also. If you're wearing shoes that are too small, you ever put on shoes that don't fit quite and they're hurting your little toe? And after a while, your whole consciousness goes to your little toe. Right? So we're all part of the transcendental body of the Lord. And therefore, every living entity has to be cared for. There's no question of caring for anybody more than anybody else. This is a material concept. These are my friends. These are my enemies. These people have good qualities. They should be cared for nicely. These people have bad qualities. They should be neglected. Prabhupada says here, regardless of good or bad qualities, doesn't matter. And not even just people, but also animals. And not only animals, but also people. Sometimes you see devotees, they're nicer to the cows than they are to the other devotees. You know, like here it says the husband sees his wife as half of his body, you know. We were talking with one husband the other day who had very much neglected his wife, but he was nice to the cows. I said, can't you treat your wife as nicely as you treat the cows? So to be kind to everyone, every living entity, from the tiniest insect, even to those who caused you harm. I mean, we like to think how we're so far superior to the Christians, but Jesus also talked about this. He says everybody loves their friends. I mean, even the animals love their friends. Even the tiger, Prabhupada says, is kind to its own cubs. That's not a great qualification. If you give the necessities of life to those over whom you feel, Prabhupada says, here's some ownership. My husband, my wife, my children, my mother, my race, my ethnicity. I was reading a study that tiny babies prefer people who speak their own language in their own accent than others. Interesting. They didn't have a preference as far as like skin color, but they had a preference as far as language. If someone spoke their own language in their own accent, little tiny babies, they would smile more and look more. So we have the sense, Swajana, my people, like Arjuna thought, my people, I'll take care of them. And someone who's not mine, I won't take care of them. Why take care of them? There's somebody different. I remember at Arathiyatra talking to this one woman who was saying, you know, I'm a Catholic. And I said, well, Jesus says, love your neighbor. Who do you think is your neighbor? Only your family? Only other people of your nationality? Only other Catholics? So this is not the view of the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam is saying here that you have to take care of everyone. Here specifically about the householders, because the householders particularly have this view of ownership. My family, my house, my money. That's the Maya of the grahastas. The Maya of the renunciates is it's nobody's. You know, we see sometimes the temple cars, they're not properly maintained because, well, it doesn't belong to me. It's nobody's. So that's one kind of Maya. And then the householder who takes care of the car because it's mine is another kind of Maya. So the philosophy of the Bhagavatam is everyone is taken care of. Everyone is given what they need. Prabhupada says the necessities of life. Necessities of life, by the way, do not only mean food, shelter, water, physiological necessities. It also means psychological necessities. Prabhupada talks about everyone needs to be engaged in work according to their nature. That's also giving people their necessities. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about how we have physical necessities, mental, intellectual, social, emotional. That also should be done. Just like we consider cow protection to involve also hand milking the cows. Why? We don't say cow protection just you give them proper food and you give them a shelter and you brush them and keep them clean and free from disease. Just like I remember when I was at one devotee farm many, many, many years ago, 30-some years ago, 35 years ago, and they were milking the cows with these machines. You know, you just stick on the milking thing. Nowadays, the modern farmers, they're developing robots to stick the things on the cows. So not even a human being doesn't put them on. Whereas Krishna, he goes to milk the cows himself. And he has this beautiful gold milking stool and a golden pot, and he sits down next to the cow, and he puts the bucket between his knees. And as he's milking the cow, he leans on the belly of the cow, and his turban tilts to the side. And the young gopis are watching, and they're saying to their parents, Krishna is such an expert cow milker. You should bring him to our house to milk our cows. And they're very impressed. Just like young girls, they're impressed if a boy has a nice career. So the gopis are impressed that Krishna is a good cowherd man. So also the necessity of the cows is to be treated with affection. It's like they've done studies, little babies, if they don't get any physical affection, they'll get sick and die. They don't just need food. So necessities for everyone means psychological. They're engaged according to their propensities. You have people do the work by which they feel enlivened. It means social. People get to be with others of like nature. Everybody needs friends and communities. Prabhupada would say we're social animals. Actually, in Vaikuntha and Goloka Vrindavan, it's social. Prabhupada says there's no sannyas in Goloka Vrindavan. There's nobody, you know, silently meditating in a cave under the ground in Goloka Vrindavan. Everybody has family. Everyone has community. Even Krishna, Prabhupada often says, is never alone. So although in some species, entities are not social, like the shrew. The shrew is a very antisocial creature. It associates with its own kind just the bare necessity to mate, and that's it. Otherwise, you know, it hates even its own kind. But that's very far from the ultimate original spiritual ideal. We see such a species as not being very evolved. So there's also social necessities. Actually, what Srila Prabhupada talks about in terms of Varnashram, he's talking about engaging our social necessities in Krishna's service. And we have emotional necessities. We come from the spiritual world where everybody, it says so nicely in the third canto, everyone appreciates everyone else's service. Now, sometimes we think in the Hare Krishna movement that we should never appreciate anybody, that everybody should just work hard, and we should never thank anybody, unless they give money, maybe. Then we'll thank them and give them a garland and a plaque, but not just officially. But to really be grateful. So I do some service with the Devotee Care Committee, and we've put together a booklet about these different items of care. Physical care, psychological care, social care, emotional care. And of course, the greatest care is spiritual care. Because if you only give those other kinds of care and you don't give spiritual care, it's all useless. It's just polishing the cage without feeding the bird. But of course, you want to polish the cage too. It's not that you only want to feed the bird and keep the bird in a dirty cage. And we say if you're going to save a drowning person, you don't only save the coat, but usually you save the clothes too. You don't generally save the drowning person naked. Right? So Prabhupada's talking about an imbalance in society where we only think about the material. We forget about the most important thing, which is the spiritual. But in a civilized society, you take care of everything. If you have a child, you don't just teach them how to chant Hare Krishna, you also feed them. Here in the temple, we feed the brahmacharis. We feed them quite nicely here in the manor, frankly. We don't have, actually, we take even nicer care of the sannyasis. We don't say, oh, Maharaj, you're a sannyasi. All you need is spiritual care. No room for you. No prasadam for you. Just live on prana. Oh, we understand that actually, and Prabhupada talks about this in the previous purport, those who are dedicated to spiritual life need to be provided all the material necessities so that they don't have any anxiety about them. So that is creating an international society for Krishna consciousness and ultimately a world society. Whether ISKCON will run that world society or not, I have some doubts. But at least ISKCON should be training people how to run a world society. And a world society means everyone is cared for on every level. And everyone really means everyone. It means even those that you don't want to touch, like the dogs. You know, I've seen in India, people kick the dogs for no reason other than just they're dogs. They aren't even doing anything except being dogs. And they get kicked. And I've seen in our Hare Krishna movement, it doesn't go on here at the manor at all, but it goes on in some places in our Hare Krishna movement, that you're figuratively kicked just because you're a woman. You don't even have to be doing anything. So we want to care for everybody, never mind what kind of body that you have. Never mind even if you're full of bad qualities. Doesn't matter. Everyone should be cared for. So that's on the one side. Then on the other side is everyone should be cared for differently. Because real care isn't caring for everyone the same, because although we all have in one sense the same physiological needs and the same emotional needs and the same social needs and the same psychological needs in a general way. Psychologists can talk about, you know, everybody needs love, everybody needs to have meaning, everybody needs to have peace, everybody needs to have beauty, everyone needs autonomy, everyone needs freedom. And physiologically, we all need food, water, constant temperature, shelter, etc. You know, but we need them differently. I can't wear exactly the same clothes that you wear or you wear. They won't fit. And I can't eat exactly the same food that you eat or you eat. I won't be able to digest it. I can't eat the same quantity of food or the same kind of food. And I can't do the same kind of work to be happy. You know, if you told me, okay, Urmila, just manage the accounting and stay in a little room counting the money every day for the rest of your life. I did that. I was the treasurer in Chicago and in Boston. But if I had to do that all day for the next 40 years, I'd go nuts. It doesn't fit my nature. You know, and some people, I know we have some wonderful people here who've been serving the deities for like 40 years. Same service every day. And if you said, okay, now travel with Indrajumna Swami on the festival program, they probably wouldn't be happy. So one man's food is another man's poison. The Ayurvedic science is that everyone has a different normal. Modern medicine is, there's the same normal for everyone. You can look at the height-weight charts and see what's the right weight for your height. But you know, that's not the same for everybody. If I weighed the right weight for my height by that chart, I'd be really fat. Because I have tiny little bones. No, it's just not true. It's not true that, you know, like the modern Western doctors, they'll prescribe this is the right diet for everybody. It's not a fact. So we have both. We're individual. Everyone's individual. They need to be taken care of, as Prabhupada says, as much as deserved. What they'll use properly, what will actually nourish them on all levels. And this is true even spiritually. Prabhupada says we should engage in spiritual activities according to our taste. Says that in Nectar Devotion and other places also. There's a certain minimum that Prabhupada required of everyone. 16 rounds, 4 regulative principles, reading his books daily, etc. But other than that, it's according to our taste. One person may have more of a taste for one kind of service. Another person has more of a taste for another kind of service. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told Gopal Bhatta Goswami, you just study Bhagavatam. Told Rupa and Sanatan, you write books. And even told them what to write in the books. And one devotee, you worship the Ganga. Another devotee, you go out and preach. Different. One devotee, you go get married. Told Lord Nityananda, you go get married. Told Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, you don't get married. Told Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, you serve your parents. Told Raghunath Das Goswami, get away from your parents. Different. The Lord likes these differences, but differences doesn't mean anyone's neglected. Now, people without spiritual vision try to apply this equal indifference understanding, but they really, really struggle with it. So having worked in education, we see that it used to be, before the Industrial Revolution, that most people received very minimum academic education. Most people just gained basic literacy. Some people didn't even gain that, which is not very good, but most people gained just basic, how to do basic reading and writing, basic mathematics. And then they learned a skill. They learned some kind of a trade. And only people who really were academically interested went higher in education. And the education was differentiated at a very young age. By the time you were 12, 14, you were learning an education suited to your particular propensity. And then with the Industrial Revolution, the children, their only way of contributing to the family was to go to the factory. And the factories, you know, they were getting their fingers cut off. They weren't seeing the sun all day. They were getting sick from the fumes. So then they said, okay, compulsory education for everyone. And gradually, this education for all has become more and more all. So when I was growing up, people with severe physical and mental impairments were not put in the regular school system. Now they are. When I was little, we had some different training for men and women, for girls and boys at a certain age. Now everybody gets the same training. When I was in secondary school, they had different tracks for vocational and academic. Now they're saying, don't track anybody. Have everybody do exactly the same thing. You know, mandated courses. Some core curriculum that everybody has to take. And what happens? A lot of the students don't do well. And you can predict, you know, we don't talk about it publicly, but you can predict which kinds of students won't do well. And then we try to force them to do well. Let's do this intervention, that intervention, and then they change the whole education system just to be geared to the lowest category of students. And what about everybody else? So that's their idea of treating everybody equally. Or we're going to treat men and women equally. Well, how are you going to do that? There's this funny biological fact that women have babies, which most women today consider rather inconvenient. So, okay, just stop having women have babies. Give them chemicals. Give them surgery, kill their babies, and then the men and women can be equal. Oh, I'm just at this point in my career. Oops, got a baby, better kill it. And let's not have any class distinctions. I mean, here in the UK, you still have lords and ladies. In America, that's against the law. You can't have any sirs, and there's no titles of royalty. We're all equal. They say Australia is the highest culture in terms of everybody is supposed to be equal in terms of class. And after that is America. But even in Western Europe, there's this concept, you know, oh, no, we're all equal. There's no difference. Everybody's the same. Everybody should be treated exactly the same. Of course, it's a bunch of nonsense. It doesn't work. There's all kinds of terrible consequences. You know, in 1960, 4% of children were born out of marriage, and now it's 60%. So trying to make men and women equal artificially doesn't work. And we haven't eliminated class conflict, have we? And nor do we have an education system that works. It's not working for the people who don't want to be there, and it's not working for the people who are academically inclined. So just giving everybody their necessities in the same way is a failure. And then when we try to differentiate materially, we make a mess of it too. You know, modern society, okay, we'll treat different people differently. We'll bring the dog in our bedroom and we'll eat the cow and we'll feed the cow to the dog. You know, they don't get that either. Oh, yeah, we're a rich country. We can exploit the poor. When we go here in the UK or in America, or most of Western Europe, and we buy our clothes and our little gadgets, and we think, wow, I got a good deal. Do you know what the real price for those things are? The real way we've gotten a good deal is somebody's making that who doesn't get paid enough. Somebody's making that who has no medical insurance, no medical care, that if they get injured on the job, they're just fired, and then they're disabled for life. And it's because of that that we can get everything so cheaply. You know, there's no pollution controls in China. I know, I've been there. You can't breathe. And after a few days, you know, you can't breathe anymore. And I went to the hospital and they said, oh, this happens to everybody. You can't see the sky. It's all polluted, even out in the country. Why? Because that way they can manufacture things cheaply. So that's thinking, oh yeah, we're different. We're better than they are. We can afford to live at their cost. Or racial wars. You know, there are African countries where there's fighting between different races, you know, different tribes, and they're killing each other, and it's been going on for decades. So we don't get it right materially when it comes to giving everybody the same necessities, and we don't get it right materially when it comes to differentiating. We make a mess of both of them. But the inclination to take care of everyone equally and the inclination to differentiate is there even in modern society, just like Varnashram is there in modern society in a perverted form. So we as devotees, we have to see, I need to give everyone equal care according to what they need and my relationship with them. No one should ever be neglected. Not that those who give money are taken care of and those who give time are neglected. Not that the cows are taken care of and the devotees are neglected. Everyone should be cared for, but according to their particular situation. To give spiritual guidance appropriately. To give material necessities appropriately. And to really care. That's what Krishna does. Krishna actually really cares for every living entity. And if we want to be servants of Krishna, we also have to be like that. To care, but to care appropriately. What will really be good for this other person? What will be good for this living entity? Without doing that, our advancement in Krishna consciousness is just simply some sort of a hallucination. Even on the impersonalistic path, you have to do good for all living entities. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, Namruchi Jivadoya. We were just reading about the Kaliya pastime, why Kaliya couldn't stay in Vrindavan, because he never took shelter of the residents of Vrindavan. And it's not even just caring for the other devotees. Jivera Swaropaya Krishnara Nityadasa. Everyone is Krishna's devotees. So in our dealings with others, we should always think, am I doing my best to care for this other living entity in a way that's appropriate for them and me and my relationship with them and my service to them? And to never be, as we were studying last time I was here with the 12th chapter, to never be the cause of anxiety for anyone. Not to live at the cost of someone else. Not to be happy that I'm being taken care of and others are not. To actually be sensitive to the needs of others. That is actually a servant of the Lord who himself is like that. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridayeshwar Dinajistati Brahmayam Sarvabhutani Yantrarudmani Maya. The Krishna in everyone's heart. He's sensitive. Eko Bahunam Yovidadati Kaman. He's giving everybody exactly what's best for them. And he's equal. He's not anyone's friend or anyone's enemy. So this has to be done just to be civilized. I mean, this is an instruction here, just for a pious householder. What to speak of for a transcendentalist. And if we do this, then our Hare Krishna movement will be so attractive. And we will actually be able to give a blueprint to the world. Because the world wants to do these things. They really do. They talk about it all the time, all the leaders of the world, leaders on any level. They genuinely want it. How can we give everyone what they need and at the same time appropriately differentiate? But they haven't a clue. Because they don't know the basic thing. That we are all actually equal on the spiritual platform and as children of Krishna. They don't know that. And they don't know that our present differences are just due to our material circumstances, nor do they know how to engage those differences. So this is one hallmark of true humility. If we want to know what is humility, how is it demonstrated? Amani na mani dena. To show respect to everyone. That doesn't just mean that I take my body and fall on the ground and say vanchakalpa. It means that I really meditate on, as Krishna says in the sixth chapter, a true yogi sees the happiness and distress of other beings in relation to himself. Or as Chanakya Pandit says, you treat others as you'd like to be treated. Really respecting others means, let me do whatever I can according to what Krishna has given me, according to my service, my position, my situation, appropriate to my position, to help any living entity that Krishna puts in my path, that Krishna puts in my life, to receive everything they need spiritually, physically, socially, emotionally, psychologically, in such a way that will actually benefit them. Then we have a society. And if we don't do that, then we're not really showing respect. Then we're either in the moods of friends and enemies, or we're even beyond that, just in myself, and just thinking, you know, well, what do I need, and who cares about anybody else? So say tomorrow we'll talk about specifically about the wife. I remember being asked maybe a year or so ago by one devotee that he said, the Shastra often enjoins how the woman should treat the husband, but where does it say about the husband, how the husband should treat the wife? So it's very nice how the man tends to think of the wife as half of his body and thinks of a sense of ownership, but instead to engage the wife in the service of the public and in the service of Krishna.